This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Liv and Lynn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's Feminist Fridays again, and today we are tackling the topic of domestic violence. So in January this year, the estranged husband of the late Nur Hidayah Abdul Ghani was finally convicted of her murder under the penal code. Prior to being battered to death, though, she endured nearly a decade of domestic violence. While justice is served in this case, domestic violence is still an ongoing issue, and, you know, most of the cases go unreported. Joining me to discuss this is relationship therapist Azza Yasmin Yusuf and Nur Azlina Abdul Aziz from the Faculty of Law of UITM. Welcome, ladies. How are you today?
Oh, fine.
I'm fine.
Thank you for having us here.
No, thank you so much for joining us. You know, this, I think, is a very important topic that affects a lot of women, and, you know, is underreported. So before we start, for the sake of clarity, what constitutes domestic violence against women in particular?
I think the definitions of domestic violence, the general definition would be any abusive action, violent action against the woman, towards the woman, or in domestic violence act per se, it extended the victims to also include the child, the incapacitated adults, parents that they have in the house, as long as they stay together with the husband and wife. Mm-hmm. But then I think after 2012, we have extended furthermore Domestic Violence Act, so that violence include also emotional, which previously we do not have this. So the violence of psychological injury, emotional injury is now well governed under the Domestic Violence Act.
Yes, because violence isn't just about physical violence, is it? Yeah. Azza, was there anything you'd like to add to that?
I'm just wondering why the men are not included in that, or did I hear that wrong? You know, because violence is not gender specific in my books. You know, the women, if they can get angry, they have anger issues, and they will lash out if needs be. So for them, there needs to be something to protect the men as well.
Okay. Sorry, the only reason I focus on women is because it's Feminist Friday, so I'll focus.
Okay.
By the way, domestic violence to cover for men as well.
Yes.
There you go. Men and women as well.
Okay.
And so, even today we have the highlighted male teacher being raped by 4 female students.
Really? Where was this?
I think somewhere in Malaysia, but I have not read. I think back in Terengganu or Kelantan.
My goodness.
And he fainted.
Oh, I'm shocked.
I'm very shocked.
I don't know what to say.
Okay, sorry again, just to focus on the violence against women. I mean, just because it's Feminist Friday. So, but what do you think are the origins or causes of male violence against women, especially in a domestic setting? You know, is it rooted in patriarchal society? Is it biological? Is it sociological? Is it just a desire for power and control? You know, what do you think it stems from?
I think it's a bit all of the above, really. The pursuit of power over somebody, feeling lack of self-esteem, so they need to be at least in one part of or the area of their life that they feel dominant, because outside of that, they feel that they've been trampled on. It also could be a child of domestic violence themselves, where they decided that they will emulate what their parents have done. Although not every domestic violence child grew up that way. Mm-hmm. But there are some that choose other paths in lives. But, you know, that could be one of them reasons as well. It also could be a mental incapacitation, depression or anxiety, to the extent where they need to lash out and they don't know any other route but to do that. So really the person, not only the person that receives the violent needs help, also the person that gives the violent needs help too. And I think that needs to be addressed here as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, I think on top of what Azza have said, perhaps the society themselves are not aware that this is not merely a family matter. It should be a public concern. Mm-hmm. So then neighbours plays a role, society plays a role, even the workplace plays a role to sense whether their workmates in any way signs of abuse at home. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, we also have a weak system, support system for this, that is inclusive of the law, the enforcement. That's about it.
Okay. Do you think gender roles tie into the whole occurrence of violence against women? You know, like, I am the man, so I am the lead of this house, and therefore you are sort of, you know, my...
The person I have to look after.
Yes, person I have to look after, and therefore person that I can do anything I like to. I mean, do you think that... This is a very leading question.
It is. It is, woman. Okay. What would you like me to say?
So let's just go back to, do you think gender roles are tied into this in any way at all?
I think from a societal point of view, boys are brought up to never hit women, and women are, or girls are brought up to, you know, if you get violated, either sexually, whatever, please lash out and protect yourself. Mm-hmm. So you have this gender roles already innate in them as they grow up. So there are men, if they, you know, get abused by their women, they will say, but, you know, I'm a man, I don't hit back, I don't hit my women. So they take it in hopes that she will change. Okay. In that sense, if it's the other way around, it could be like I said earlier, like, you know, low self-esteem and all that jazz. Yeah.
Okay. Or perhaps, I mean, do you think it's perhaps that they were, in some sense, they were actually brought up also to think that they can treat women this way?
Probably. You know, there are some certain sects of society. We don't know. Mm-hmm. There's very little research on this. Even when I started doing researching on domestic violence years back, even until today, I don't find the answer that, you know, the questions that you're asking me now, I don't find the answer. I think it's also because the shame of it all, the guilt of it all, of receiving violence towards you, so people don't report. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that, you know, it's not gender specific at all, and especially for the men, like, my gosh, my wife beat me, goodness, I'm not a man, why would I want to say that to the police, you know? Yeah. You know, so you already are feeling shameful for being beaten, and then you go to the police and say, I'm being beaten by my wife. So it just doesn't gel with that person. So it's not a lot of research out there.
Okay. Anything to add to that, Zina?
Nothing much, but then I do agree to what Hazaf said again. But I think basically we go back to the culture that we have in Malaysia. I believe the traditional upbringing of a mother just to coach the boy in the house to be dominant, where the girls need to do all the house chores and all that, but not the boys, and it's nothing wrong for them to sit back, nothing wrong for them to punch in order to defend themselves. I guess this has been very long in our society, and not only confined to Malaysia. Historically, it goes back to when, you know, you have a daughter being born, newly being born daughter, it says something, a shame to the family. Yeah, yeah. You know, that one rooted in our society. And I believe there is still that practice in the society.
Still very dominant, yeah.
Yeah, so I would say maybe there's a gender...
gender role does.
Yes. Okay. In some kind. But then definitely nowadays, boys get molested as well.
And Azza, I mean, in your practice, have you come across male victims of domestic abuse? Because, I mean, you mentioned it just now. So have you come across that in your work?
I haven't, actually.
Okay. Perhaps, again, it's to do with...
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they will admit to a woman that's happened, even though as a counsellor, we shouldn't judge, we shouldn't put blame, and we're there to help. But I think it's the truth lies with them if they want to come in and do that and actually come out and beat the gender biasness of that thought process. So, yeah. So, no, I haven't, unfortunately.
Okay. All right. Mm. But what about you, Azlina?
I don't think that I face any case, but then maybe there are some complaints from my... I wouldn't say colleague, someone that can be strangers to me, newly to me, but then the definitions of violence itself may also include the constraint of your financial. That means the wife dominates the spending, the expenses in the household. That can be categorized as violence towards male. So if you're asking me, is there any cases violence inflicted on male? I would say yes, there is, except for they have a shame of complaining on that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm speaking today to Azza Yasmin Yusuf and Narazina Abdul Aziz, and we're discussing domestic violence and marital rape. And we'll continue this discussion after this short break. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's Feminist Fridays, and we are discussing domestic violence and marital rape today. And in the studio with me are Azza Yasmin Yusuf. She's a relationship therapist, and also Noor Azlina Abdul Aziz, who's with the Faculty of Law in UITM. So, ladies, you know, earlier we were talking about Noor Hidayah's case, and you also, Azlina, you also mentioned that, you know, society needs to take a bigger role. The bystander effect, you know, that's what happened in Noor Hidayah's case, where neighbours and surrounding community, they completely turned a blind eye and dismissed the violence as personal family matters. And you know, I read so many interviews with victims of domestic violence, and they mentioned that, you know, neighbours knew, but, you know, it was a family affair. How do you think we should address that issue?
Addressing that issue, I think, needs very cohesive collaborations between all members of the society. Number one is they should be aware. Again, I would highlight, it's a matter of public concern. It's not a family confined matters. But I think, again, it goes back to our culture, mm-hmm. whereby we were told at our younger age not to interfere to anybody else. Mind your business. Yeah. Don't interfere. Yeah. So in this case, seeing a wife being not beaten, I think something lower than that, it's a normal case. Mm-hmm. Seeing a child being tame, a little bit of punching and all that, that sounds to be normal. For mm-hmm. us to give educations to either the wife or the children. So maybe that type of attitude need to be breakfast. So okay. As soon as we are out of the attitude, we need to put insert something like, we don't mind our own business nowadays. Mm-hmm. We do interfere if there is some violence or something that we suspiciously seen that it's going to bring harm to the person that we know. Mm-hmm. So we should interfere.
Okay. All right. Azza, anything you'd like to add?
Well, that's a huge paradigm shift for the entire culture, you know. I think that people... I echo what Azlina says, that people don't want to interfere because that is that family. Don't interfere. Don't get, you know... orang Melayu kata jangan jaga tepi kain orang. You know?
Okay.
Yeah, all so right. Don't do that. But I also think that there is a fear of the violence hitting them, those people that interfere as well. Mm-hmm. So because they see the bruises and stuff like that. And I mean, why would I on earth want to get bruised as well?
Yeah.
You know, so that's
obviously a violent person you're dealing with.
Exactly. And I may not be capable. I'm a woman, for example, or I'm a man smaller than this man or this woman, for example. So they might not want to get involved that way. And then that also means to them that they have to make a police report as well, what's going on. They also may not get supported by the people around them mm-hmm. for them to be to interfere. Mm-hmm. So it's all about support. It's all about, yes, Alzina, awareness. And it's all about just breaking that attitude and just help.
Mm. And, you know, I think there's so many NGOs out there who are working on women's issues, yes. Women's AIDS organization, AWOM, for example. You know, I suppose the thing is to call these people and, you know, find out how to approach it, if at all, right?
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Going back to the victims themselves, you know, more often than not, they don't actually voice out that they're being abused. Why do you think that is?
I think, again, the thing I would like to quote what, as I have mentioned before, low self-esteem, not confident, and then afraid that the violence might escalate. Mm-hmm. The shame that they need to protect, the dignity of the family, the psychological effect of the children, many, many others. And it goes back to the victim themselves. I think that's why they didn't complain. And then I guess by reading some of the victims, the experience that they have, it is something not favorable to them, the victim. Mm-hmm. How the, not to say the police, the social welfare and all that, maybe there are a lack of, I would say, experience to
courage.
Assist.
Courage?
Oh, the,
I would say
empathy.
The enforcement authorities, I think maybe because most of them are government-based, so we are subject to transfer. Mm-hmm, so when you're subject to transfer, you are new to something which is like domestic violence. Today, you report duty, and there comes a case of domestic violence. You are still in your positions of finding what should I do and all that. So this happens. So we need someone who are experts in that area to be the frontliners so that they can assist the victims.
Mm-hmm. I think training as well, providing training to the law enforcement and actual training to social workers and those involved and what to do and what not to do, and especially what to say and not to say in order to not, you know, spark anything with the person, the perpetrator itself. I also think on the part of the victim that it's better the devil you know than the devil you don't. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. I know I can anticipate what will happen and I know the scenario. Whereas another life would be, there's so many questions. How would I live? Where would I live? Where would the money come from? How would I get a job? I don't know whether I can get a job or not. I don't have any education. And if I move out, will he find me?
Yeah.
You know, there's all these fears and questions that then it's not answered. So, and they can't go out and answer because if and find the answers, or even on the internet, because, you know, he might just or she might just go on the internet and say, "Ah, you've been researching. Are you going to leave me?" And that kind of that might would say, you know,
like the violence escalates.
Exactly.
Like you said,
yeah. So, this. I mean, when I say support to the victim, it's a whole systemic support and training for the people who needs to support the victim itself. And that is a huge, huge endeavor.
And, you know, sexual violence actually usually accompanies other forms of domestic violence. And why is that so? I mean, it's very common, we all know it. Have you come across that in your research, Azlina?
I believe yes, but that domestic violence is a wider scope. Sexual is one of them. So I think sexual intercourse, as what the traditional belief is, that the dominant person would be the male. So by inflicting sexual abuse towards the partner shows that I'm dominant over you. So I guess the feeling would be greater than normal abuse.
And it's also, I suppose, an exertion of power, as you say, right?
Yes.
On that note, what are the legal rights that people have to protect themselves from domestic violence and rape in marriage in particular?
Basically, I know that it's a heated debate nowadays, but then we already have Penal Code. Then later we have Domestic Violence Act in 1994, even though it's being implemented later, 1996. But then with these two statutes that we have, basically, the provisions in the statute would be sufficient. What is missing is the efficient enforcement of what is provided in the provisions. So this, I think, have been an inherent problem for most of the statutes. Not that they don't understand, not that the law enforcer do not understand the law, but except for they like to manipulate the words, the provisions that we have. So it depends on what types of person that advocates for you.
That sounds like a true lawyer.
Because marital rape is not...
It's not an offence by virtue of Section 375. It categorised that any person, any man who without the consent have sexual intercourse with a wife, or it is considered to be rape. Not a wife, sorry. I rephrase that one, bukan wife. Any man who have sexual intercourse with a woman without her consent, this is considered to be rape.
Okay.
And of course, the elements of rape itself need to penetrations and all that.
Yeah.
But then, Section 375 through the exceptions specifically exclude marital rape.
Okay.
So I think this is the provision, the most controversial provisions that most of the NGOs and activists demanded to be removed from Penal Code. But then, let me explain further. We have 375 capital A, we have 377 capital C and capital A, which covers a wide more. That means, like Section 375 capital A, it's a provision that provide for inflictions of harm in order to have sexual intercourse. So this one can frame marital rape. And this is also for husband and wife, because it does not specifically exclude husband and wife relationship. And 377 capital A and capital A, capital C and A, 377 capital C A, this one provides for sexual connection using objects.
So I think it's very important, those people who want to sue or want to have...
To charge.
They don't want to charge. They must see which section that they're under. Otherwise, it will be double jeopardy, right?
Yes.
So once you've done one, you can't do it again. That's what double jeopardy means.
Right.
My law lecturer will be very happy with me. So yeah, so that's what I would... advise rape victims that, you know, listen to Azlina, you know, listen to this again and get the numbers correct and the capital alphabets correct.
This may be a tricky question for you to answer, but why do you think it's not criminalized in Malaysia?
That is a tricky question.
I mean, does it go back to gender roles, you know, the notion of fulfilling the duties of a wife? You know, if your husband asks for intercourse, you have to agree, you know. I don't know. It's tough. I know it's a tricky question.
Yeah, it is. I think on the top, from the top of my head, and this is purely my opinion, that the lawmakers or the people who are drafting need to be aware and train themselves of the issues that that's pertaining to this area. And so therefore they are in the know that they can draft it properly. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's not easy to draft the law. I was talking to a friend this morning and we were talking about the PDPA. And he said it took 10 years. Mm-hmm. And the revision over revision over revision. Yeah. So it's not easier said than done. But it would, I feel it would be a start if the lawmakers actually come down to the ground, speak to the victims, speak to the police, speak to those that are going to use these laws, the recipients of these laws, yeah, and the law and the lawyers that are going to use these laws, to actually see how can we help you? Mm-hmm. How can we help make the law help you? And how can you get respite from this?
Yeah.
I guess why they do not criminalize marital rape, the misconception that the traditional belief a wife should be the property of a husband. Mm-hmm. So when there is a marital rape occurs, the husband is just merely using the property. That was the traditional belief, the old school. And they did insert, I think, the answer to the questions when the activists do say that why didn't the ministry criminalize marital rape? So the answer given is that it is against Sharia law. I believe that is where the misconception goes. As I think the Sharia law protects Muslim women, not only Muslim, I think all women, all religion would protect women. Mm-hmm. If we really follow the principles of the religious principles that we have. Because besides saying that, in a marital relationship, the wife should abide to whatever request and demand of the husband. But the religious principles do also stress that there is ethic to have sex with your other spouse, the other half of yours. Mm-hmm. That ethic should need, one of them is to receive consent from them. So there are abundance of verses in the Al-Quran stating that the relationship of husband and wife should be built with the foundation of love and mutual respect. Mm-hmm. So I think they left out the understanding of that.
I think people need to make a difference between culture, religion, and the law.
Yeah.
The law says this. The religion, I'm studying the religion again at this university here, and I see it so beautiful. You know, the Islamic law, and the fact that before you have sex with your other half, you say that I take you in the name of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and you have to have that consent prior to. There's nothing that says that, you know, I can force myself on you. That itself is culture. So if people can make that difference between culture and religion, and not use, I mean, my father would say, you know, the devil can quote scripture for its own purpose.
Yes, I
you know, yes. You've heard that before. Yeah. So, you know, and that itself, if you're the devil and you're quoting the scripture, that itself is cultural. It has nothing to do with the actual religion itself. Yeah. So if we can make that difference, I think we'll start making a step forward.
And I would imagine in any loving relationship, there would not be any use of force for something like sexual intercourse, but that is my opinion. No, Azlina, you authored a paper, Marital Rape, A View on Malaysia Law and Common Law. It was quite a while ago. It was 2004. You know, what were sort of some of your findings and, you know, how do you think that's changed in the last few years?
Right. If I refer back to that paper of mine, which was conducted, the research was conducted earlier, which is 2001, but it got published finally in 2004. Mm-hmm. I think law have changed. Many law have changed. And I look at the paper. I would like to add up to some and upgrade the paper soon. But then my findings would be, it's the same a stigma that we have back 13 years ago until today, that marital rape is not an offence unless that woman is in a process of separation, divorce. So for the non-Muslim, it's a dikri nasai, the process of dikri nasai. And for the Muslim woman, it's in the process of idah. So only in that period of time, if the husband have sexual intercourse without the consent of the we can't call ex-wife, it's wife, it's still wife. It is considered to be rape, only in that particular matter.
Okay. Let me expand a little bit there. The period of iddah is basically a 3-month grace period from the point where the husband says, I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you, 3 times in front of either the judge or 2 witnesses. And during this time, the period of iddah, or 3 cycles of your period, one of the things is that to make sure that there's no baby. So it protects the lineage of the baby and the, and we know who the father is. Or if they are pregnant for some reason, the period of iddah extends to that until the child gets born.
I see.
Yeah. So in that sense, there is a point where if you want to reconcile with your husband, you can you have intercourse and you reconciled. And in Malaysia, you have to go back to the court and say we've reconciled and then get... register that, and then you don't have to go through an akad nikah again because it's when that time.
Okay.
So yeah, so people will get, like I said, again, that's the law and that's the religion. But when it's culturally, I says I can still have you because you're still my wife until the last drop on the third month.
Right.
So it's that awareness and that misinformation that we need to correct at the moment.
Do you think the law tends to be biased towards women? Is that, you know, what are your thoughts about that?
It might seem that it is leaned more towards women, but I think in practice, no, because basically, as I've mentioned, Section 375 capital A, 377 C and A also covers male violence, violence against male, and 377 capital C capital A is also usable for lesbian couples, homosexual couples.
Okay. That's a lot of privilege. I did not know that.
I did not know that either. We learn something new every day. What was that section again? I'll write that down later. Yes, I will.
So, I mean, just going back to a victim, the victims themselves, you know, sometimes I guess they might not even know that they're a victim. So what are some signs to look out for to know that, because like we said, it's not always physical, right? So what are some signs to look out for to see that if you're in an abusive relationship, male or female?
Other than the physical abuse, which means bruises or lacerations on the person itself, you can also see from a physical point of view, probably the hair is not as, you know, the hair drops because of overstressed or from the relationship. You can see that, you know, they might be walking with their heads down. They might have lost weight, you know, and they were bubbly before. Personality-wise, they were bubbly before. They talked to you with, you know, with vigor. And all of a sudden, in the next few months, they will, you know, they look down. They don't see themselves. They don't look like themselves. They don't, we don't, we're not having a good relationship with them. So that's a personality point of view. So that's an outsider looking in. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're the person itself that's receiving the violence, probably other than the physical portion of it, a lot of control. Control from the point of view of finances, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, what are you doing? Why are you spending that? We don't have any money. Give me your salary. I know you don't know how to do your finances. Let me do it for you. So there's a two-prong to that one. One is holding the money and saying, and one, the other one is putting that person down.
Yeah.
You see, so that, yeah. So, and then they attack the personality, and then the person goes, hang on a minute. Am I like that? So they will start questioning themselves because this is the person I love. This is the person I have fell in love with. There is no way this person will have bad feelings for me.
Or bad intentions
for me, you know. So I will follow suit because we are in a marriage and we're a team. This is probably where it's supposed to be. So you give in. You give in to that. And with the context that he loves me or she loves me. So, you know, it's finances. It's also abuse. It's verbal abuse. You know, you don't look pretty today. I was watching a YouTube yesterday and I said, and the husband was kissing the wife and he goes, you know, you look pretty today, but your skin looks a little bit dark, a little bit blusher on it.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but to her, it was like, yeah, okay. Because I want him to be happy.
I want to look my best for him.
I want to look my best for him. He just told me that. But, you know, for us on the outside, we go, like you said, oh, dear God.
Yeah.
You know, so the symptoms and is so subtle that sometimes even outsiders, we don't see it. Not, you know, least to say the person that receives it. Mm-hmm. So it's very, very fine. It's a very fine line. So unless you give counseling to that person and that person... on her or his or her own right comes to that conclusion that, yeah, I think I think I was abused, you know.
And I think an important thing that you touched on there was control. You know, it's not necessarily financial control, but, you know, in this day and age, controlling your phone, for example, you know, controlling your movements, who are you going out with? I just read a report today about a man who saw his wife having dinner or lunch with her colleague, and he took her, he beat her, he stripped her naked, took her photos of her nude, and then he threatened to... Yeah, he threatened to use that and put it on social media. Then he took all her bank cards, her jewelry and everything and left her. You know, I mean, that is unbelievable.
I don't know what to say, but it does happen.
It does happen. Yeah. I mean, it happened here in Malaysia here, I think it was. Yeah.
The social media that we have nowadays, it's worsened, the conditions are worsened because types of violence can extend through harassment, online harassment.
Yeah, blackmail.
Many others. You are being constrained in a way that sometimes you do not being able to stop the constraint. Mm-hmm. You know, the circulations of photos, nude photos and all that. We can work with the ISP, internet service provider and all that, just to stop and pull out the materials. But then the materials have been copied many times and it still circulate. That is, I think, something that we must also address by laws. The online harassment, which also falls under one of the domestic violence.
I think it's also a technological aspect as well, that once everything is done, it can be shut down from anywhere in the world.
So, you know, you spoke about the signs that we, the outsiders, can see, right? So let's say we do notice, like, our friend is thinner, she's looking, or he or she is looking like a shell of themselves, basically, right? How would you encourage that person to tell their friend to open up to them that they are being abused, if you suspect it?
I think for the person that wants to help, first of all, they need to decide how far they want to help. I've had people come up to me and says, my friend is this, 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 this. And I ask them, first of all, if you start to help, she or he will latch on to you until she or she gets better. So how far do you want to help? How far do you want to be a friend? Mm-hmm. And because this is going to drain you as well, and you are going to get involved in his or her family, you're going to be targeted. So how far you want to do that? That's the first question. Second question, if you say, I'm going to go all the way, I love my friend, I don't like domestic violence, this is the way I'm going to help out, then fine. But you need to equip yourself first about how to approach the person gently, because they will deny what's going on, because it might exacerbate the situation. You must also understand that if it's a female victim and you're a male friend, just being with that person, getting caught on camera and on Facebook, you know, might exacerbate her situation. So you really have to be careful. Now, putting all that aside, if you have counseling skills, you know, you have empathy, you talk to her slowly or him slowly, it will take a long time for them to say, yes, I'm sexually abused, or yes, this is domestic violence going against me, what can I do? You know, so two things. You really have to be very patient with that person, and then get them to help themselves, because at the end of the day, they need to make the decisions themselves to come out. The first move. But they need to know that you are supporting them, that you are the rock for them. And if you want to go, help them all the way until you know, they get better.
Yeah. Mm. Anything to add to that, Athena?
Well, I guess maybe the one who wants to help should be alert that we are not dealing with a mere perpetrator abuser. Mm-hmm. It's a person who have some kind of mental disease, because to the extent that person have no more human values. Seeing a person being in pain and inflicting over and over again, I think we are dealing with someone who are not a mere criminal, but it's a mental patient.
There's some psychological issues involved as well. Involved.
That makes me realize that really, we talk about the law for the victim, but what the law for the perpetrator, the support for the perpetrator themselves to get better.
To be rehabilitated.
Be rehabilitated. I don't think there's anything like that in Malaysia, just because we focus on the victim and then we, you know, shoot down the perpetrator, whereas they need help as well.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, actually. I think here in Malaysia, and I think anywhere, actually, the perpetrators because they're the victim, I mean, they're the villain, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're just thrown into jail and then who knows what's happening there. They're just getting angrier.
Exactly.
And that's why a lot of them come out after jail and find their ex-wives and kill them. I mean, I've read so many cases of that happening.
Exactly. But there's so there's a place in Finland, I think it was one of the Scandinavian countries, where they actually get these men or these women to an island where they have a little community that looks like a village. They have no internet whatsoever, but they have counselors, psychologists come in every now and again, and then they are on a routine. They're in a house with, you know, proper beds, and they cook themselves and all that. So they go back for them. They go back into normal life, and they have the help that they need. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, a recurrence of there's no recurrence at all, or okay. It's about 97%. That they don't go back there at all,
okay.
Because they're rehabilitated that way instead of thrown into jail, mm-hmm. where such support isn't there, and then, you know, it's exacerbated by other inmates and stuff like that.
Yeah. That circle of hate and violence finally is broken, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So, anyway, just to conclude, you know, I mean, what are your final messages to anyone who thinks that they are being abused in the domestic setting? You know, what would your advice be to them? Any last messages?
As what many would say is that amending the law over and over again would be the solution. But for me, I don't think that amending the law is the final solution to it. If not, we have stopped to a certain point, amending the law, extending the law, inserting and then enacting a new laws. I agree with what Azhar said. That means sometimes we need to tackle the perpetrator or the criminal by way of they themselves being rehabilitated, but not to punish them, because philosophically, the objective of we sentence the criminal is that at the end of it is to punish them. But then sometimes maybe the law should not only punish a person. If it does not work, then maybe we should have something like rehabilitation instead. To set example to society, I guess. I really wish that Malaysia would set up one stop center for all, where we can place the officials, the required officials needed. We have social worker in the same center. We have police officers who specifically assigned to assist victims of domestic violence. We have the policymaker and all that, all in one center. And they are not subject to transfer to other government departments, so that they can master and become a person who is reliable in the area of domestic violence. And I think that would be a better venue for the domestic violence somewhere in future.
Wow. Last words. I think to the lawmakers who are going to, you know, look into the laws again, to come down to the grassroots and meet and talk to the people, so you do make the law for them, so that they would get the respite and get what they need in order to live a better life. For the victims, I would say there is support out there. Perhaps it's very frightening to get the support, but there are so many people that would like to support you. To be brave is difficult, but you can do it. And there is a better life out there. And there's so many people that want to help you. Mm-hmm. For the perpetrators themselves, sometimes they are ashamed that they are doing it this way. Sometimes they don't know that they're doing it. Sometimes they are aware of they're doing it, but they don't know where to get help. And I think one of the things that they need to do is admit it first and acknowledge that there is something wrong with them and to get help themselves. So that's my last messages.
Okay. Thank you so much, ladies, for joining me today.
You're welcome.
I've been speaking to Azhar Yasmin Yusuf. She's a relationship therapist, and also to Noor Azlina Abdul Aziz, who's with the Faculty of Law at UATM. And we were discussing domestic violence and marital rape. This has been Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, PFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.